Hello, I'm Tay, and welcome to Mental Health Matters, a new show at Leeds Student Radio, which aims to bring awareness and understanding to those suffering from mental illness and their supporters. On today's show, we have John Beards to talk about his charity, Assist, which is a mental health advocacy charity. But before we crack on with the interview, I wanted to start a new segment on the show called Mental Health in the News. Sorry, I know it's not very catchy and the lack of alliteration annoys me too. I thought Mental Health Matters was way better, but that's all I could come up with. But basically, for a few minutes each week, I will talk about what happens in the world regarding mental health. And this week, I wanted to talk about an article from the Times newspaper, which was published on the 9th of November, and it was sent to me by my mum, so shout out, mum. In the article, Jill Sherman uncovers some pretty shocking statistics, and I wanted to relay them to you. So, although local authorities are expected to promote physical and mental health, some town halls spend nothing on preventing mental illness because it isn't mandated. So, a lot of the time, they spend their budget on things which they think are more worthwhile, which to me is crazy because, you know, one in four people have mental health problems. Why aren't we addressing the issue? And kind of continuing the thread, the FOI study, a survey of all 152 English councils with responsibility for public health, showed that 10 had no plans at all to spend any money promoting mental health. Just to put that kind of in context, councils spend around £664 million a year on sexual health, £160 million a year on preventing smoking, and £111 million on tackling obesity. Now, obviously, I'm not saying that these issues aren't incredibly important, and yes, they do need to be faced, but I think that considering we're taking them, as we rightly should do, so seriously, I think the same attention should be shown to the epidemic of mental health which is happening across England and across the world. And although some councils do provide some kind of support, only 1% of their annual public health budget on mental health is spent on mental health services. And weirdly, the most weird thing about this is that this spending is filed under miscellaneous. Doesn't make any sense to me either. So now I've depressed you a little with all of those statistics. I think it's time that we talk to John. Hey, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks very much.
So to start off with, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself and a bit about your amazing charity?
Okay, I was an advocate. I retired a couple of years ago, but for 20 years before that, I worked for an organisation called Assist. Stands for Advocacy Services in Staffordshire, and it was a charity, well, I prefer to call it a voluntary sector organisation or a not-for-profit organisation, because basically we supported people with disabilities or mental health needs to speak up, and that's what an advocacy service basically does.
Yeah, and what inspired you to start this charity?
Well, I don't suppose it was me alone, but I was the first employee of this charity, along with somebody else. We job shared at the beginning of it, and it was rather a movement within Staffordshire and the country as a whole to help people to speak up, which was missing in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Up until the mid-90s. There was no money in it for anybody. So we just got together, got some money from Staffordshire County Council, who put their money where their mouth is, because they're always talking about supporting people to speak up within services, and they gave us some money and we went from there.
Yeah, and a few of our listeners might already be confused by the term advocacy, so do you mind just explaining that a tiny bit?
It's really quite a simple concept. It's hard to implement, but it's a simple concept. Is supporting another person to allow them to have their views expressed.
Yeah.
Now, that sounds very simple, doesn't it? But it's quite difficult because, if you think about it, people with disabilities and mental health needs are surrounded with people telling them what's in their best interests. These are the best motives. Social workers, doctors, friends, relatives, family. Everybody has a view about what's in somebody's best interest. And that can be extremely daunting for some people. They find it very difficult to just say, well, okay, but this is what I want.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes what they want is exactly what the doctor wants or exactly what a social worker wants, but sometimes it's a variation upon it. Sometimes it's the exact opposite. And it's very difficult sometimes to people to actually be able to say, no, no, this is what I want. And that's what the advocate is there for. The advocate is a person who will express the views of that person as if they were their own. And they're the only person that's able to do that.
Yeah. And when you approach a person and offer them advocacy, what can that advocate offer the person who's mentally ill?
Well, what they can offer them is a respect for their position.
Mm.
They can expect friendliness. They can expect to listen to the person and to then finally to express their views, as I say, as if they were their own, in any forum that's necessary. So if we take an example on a psychiatric ward, somebody is going into a ward meeting sometime during the week, and they want to be able to say to their doctor and to their nurses, I want this particular sort of treatment or this particular medication I don't think is doing me any good. And they feel unable to express that themselves, or they feel that they'll mince their words or they'll say the wrong thing or they'll clam up. The advocate will say to them, right, if that's what you want, I will go into that meeting with or without you, but only with your permission, and I will express that view for you. That's all I'm going to promise to do. And that's what they do. And it's quite simple.
I think that sounds really good, because I know from a few of my friends who have gone into inpatient institutions and maybe got sectioned, a lot of the time they felt very out of control, and which makes kind of their condition worse. So I think it's an amazing thing that you're doing to kind of give back a little bit of that control, and I'm sure will actually help the person get quite a lot better.
Yes. It is very much a matter of empowerment.
Yeah.
I mean, we all throw this word around, disempowered. And we all are disempowered at different times, aren't we? I mean, I'm disempowered when I go and see my doctor because of the power relationship between them. They've got all the knowledge, they've got all the skills, and I'm just somebody going along with a pain or something else, and they're the ones who tell me what's in my best interest for me to do to get better. And that's very difficult on a psychiatric ward, of course, because it's even a bigger power relationship there, because you've got people who have, in especially in the case of people who are on section, have the power to detain them. So when you're trying to express your views to another person on that ward who has the power to detain you, it is a very disempowering situation for a lot of people, and they find it very difficult to get up and say, especially if they're going to say something negative. It's very difficult for them to say that. And, you know, advocacy comes in many different flavours, especially on a psychiatric ward. Some people will just want you to listen to them so that they can get their act together, so to speak. And we may, as an advocate, just write down the things that they want and give them that list. If that's what they want, that's fine. On the other hand, they may want us to go and support them in a meeting. And I've sat in a lot of meetings where I've sat there and said, absolutely nothing, because my partner just wants that support. That there's some person, just one if necessary, who absolutely supports what they're saying. And they don't need to support them in any other way. Some people want you there as a reminder that they've got a whole load of things they want to say, and you sit there and you just nudge them occasionally and say, you wanted to say this about your medication.
Yeah.
Or you wanted to say. And some people will come into the meeting with you, but they don't want to say a word. They just want to be there, but they want you to say everything for them.
Yeah.
And lastly, you may go in there by yourself, under instruction from your partner, to say exactly what they want. And that's where the trust comes in, because the promise that you've made to them, in all circumstances, is never to express a view. And that's the difference. We never express a view because we have no right to express a view. We are there merely as the mouthpiece of the person. And that's why we can actually do that role, as long as we can show the person that that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, and you mentioned just then that as well as kind of running the charity, you yourself have acted as an advocate.
Yes, I did. Yes, in the last 5 years, there was as you well know, I'm sure, but I don't know if your listeners will know,
yeah.
The 1983 Mental Health Act was the seminal act in the United Kingdom that set up all these sections that everybody hears about. But there was an amendment in the early part of this century which made some amendments to that act. And that act gave the right, an absolute right, a funded right, that people who are held on section in a mental health institution have a right to an advocate, an independent advocate that's completely separate from any services. So I, at that stage, thought this was a good idea. We applied for the funding, and I applied to become that particular sort of advocate. So in the last 5 years of my time with the SIS, I was an active advocate on the mental health wards in Staffordshire.
Yeah, and from your experience of being an advocate, what would you say were the most difficult things about that job?
there were lots of difficult things. The thing that was least difficult was getting the trust of people, I think.
Yeah.
It's always partially difficult because, you know, you're on a mental health ward, you're vulnerable, you may be scared, you may be very ill, you may be incredibly paranoid, for example. And anybody who comes on and says, hey, I'm just here for you, I'm not any part of your care, I'm not going to say what's right or wrong for you, I'm just going to represent your views, you know, that may be a new concept for a lot of people. And so getting their trust is difficult, but that's difficult for any advocate in any environment. I think the difficult thing was trying to get the trust of the providers, of the care providers,
yeah.
of the doctors and of the nurses, the other staff. Because, you know, there has been a lot of distrust about advocacy. Advocacy sometimes has a bad reputation because people come along and see it almost as a campaigning thing. You know, we're here for the rights of service users. Now, we may privately hold a lot of those views, and I did, in fact, early on in my life, worked for Mind for several years.
Yeah.
So I have very strong views on the mental health system. But as an advocate, you are not allowed, you get drummed out of the brownies, if you ever express a view about the care of people. That's not your role to do that.
Yeah.
So, and obviously, in the country as a whole, it has been a bit of a problem with some advocacy schemes which see themselves as a bit of a campaigning organisation as well. We never express our own views, we only express the views of our advocacy partners. Now, those views of our advocacy partners may be incredibly insightful into their own condition, they may be dangerous views, they may be bizarre views.
Mm.
It doesn't matter, we only express them. It's when advocates in the past have been a bit vociferous and sort of said, you are doing wrong by this person. We've had a bad reputation. So what we have to do on the very hot house environment that are psychiatric wards is to show to the psychiatrist, show to the staff that in fact all we ever were going to do was going to express the views of our advocacy partners. So we did a lot of education.
Yeah.
We went and offered ourselves onto every single ward in the whole of Staffordshire and said, we'll come along and talk to all of your staff as many times as you want about what advocacy is and what advocacy is not. And I think that really did pay off in the long run, because in the end, you know, they were ringing up,
yeah.
and just referring people and saying, I think this person could do with an advocate, why don't you come along? Because I think they respected that we were going to do what we said on the label.
And obviously you've been working for quite a long time in the mental health system, and
yeah.
so you've kind of experienced a lot of the changes that have come with the kind of changing of governments and all of the welfare cuts. How would
yeah.
you say the care of those suffering from mental health has improved or got worse?
I've said for every moment I've been involved with mental health, there really is the Cinderella service. It's always been underfunded, it's always been understated. I adapted every report, even the Conservative government are currently accepting that there's a disparity in funding between physical and mental health. But one thing I think has been incredibly positive over the last 20, 30 years is that when I was first involved in with mind, which is nearly 30-odd years ago,
yeah,
you could actually think that that stereotype of a psychiatrist, that all that they were doing was pumping people full of meds, giving people ECTs, all that sort of stuff, was true. You know, it was an old band of psychiatrists who, you know, just pumped people full of medication. I think there's been a real change in terms of the care of people, in the terms of they're not thinking entirely about medication anymore, but they are talking about the talking therapies. So psychologists are getting involved in the care of people to a far greater extent than ever before. And I think, you know, I just get a feeling with these younger doctors and staff and the better training that people are just sort of listening more to people.
Yeah.
And allowing people to say, you know, I don't think this is right or I don't think it's wrong. One of the things that I think, one of the really fabulous kinds that you have as an advocate, and often what people are saying is not taken up, but I had enough instances of being in tribunals, being in ward meetings, being in managers' hearings, where doctors have actually said, yeah, that sounds really interesting. Let's explore that.
Yeah.
Let's go down that line. Let's really think about what you're saying as well as what I'm saying. And I think that's quite a positive move that's been happening in psychiatry over the last 20 years. But until they put the money in, you know, it's going to be a real problem.
Yeah, and just then you mentioned the disparity between mental and physical illness and how the welfare cuts affect that.
Yeah.
Why do you think when there is welfare cuts, mental health is the first thing to be affected?
You know, I have no... I think it's fear. I think we're just... All of us who haven't got a severe mental health need, we're just so fearful of mental health. And we can't see it either. You know, and there's always this, I think, a slight feeling amongst the population as a whole of almost like the same sort of brush that gets tarred on people on welfare. Just pull yourself together.
Yeah.
And you'll be all right. So it's a bit obvious. If I go outside on my bicycle tomorrow and get knocked over and break a leg, nobody's going to say, oh, pull yourself together, or anything like that. But if I have an episode of depression or an episode of psychotic behaviour, I think a lot of people still feel, you know, is it their own fault?
Yeah.
If you add that to the concept of the fear factor, but for the grace of God, that could be me, I think you get this double thing, and people can't see it, so they want to hide it away. And the one way to hide it away is not really do anything about it, just, you know, let it just run. People aren't going to be crawling along the streets with their broken legs with a psychiatric condition. They go into themselves in many cases, and it's self-harm rather than the other way around.
Yeah, and with your advocacy service, do you think that it's a popular service? Do you think it's a necessary one?
Yeah, I think it's... Well, I've got a vested interest, I suppose. But I think it's an absolutely essential service. One of the most important things that a person can have in getting better, both whether you have a mental health need or getting the best life you can with a learning disability or a physical disability, is to be able to say to the people who are providing care for you, this is what I want. Because you're the most important person. So, you know, it's not a matter, advocacy is not about getting people luxury houses or 5-bedroom houses because they say they want it. It's about getting the basics that they want, you know, a decent place to live, a decent amount of money to have, you know, whatever. And advocacy is one of the means that says to people, right, I can help you express that view. And, you know, I have a very soft spot for social workers.
Yeah.
And I find that social workers do listen to people. And it's often social workers, funnily enough, are the ones who come to me and say, so-and-so is saying X, Y, and Z, but I think they're saying it to me because they think that's what I want to hear.
Yeah.
And actually, I want to hear what they think. Even if I disagree with it, I want to hear it because that's the most important thing, to hear what they say. And I've heard psychiatrists say that to us. I've heard staff say to that. But one of the really important parts of advocacy is to hear things that I don't particularly want to hear.
Yeah.
Because that's the opinion of the person, and therefore it's very important.
Hmm. And
so I think advocacy is really, you know, it's an ace thing.
And unfortunately, that's all we've got time for today. But just one last question.
Yeah.
I think quite a lot of our listeners will be quite inspired by hearing you talk today. And maybe some of them will want to get involved. So can a lead student be a advocate?
Well, I was going to say this in anyway, even if you hadn't asked that. What you need to do is there will be advocacy schemes in Leeds. There will be voluntary sector organisations in Leeds which provide advocacy. All you need to do, and if you can only do a couple of hours a week, you can be an advocate.
Yeah.
You know, they take on lots of volunteers. And you don't need to commit yourself for 25 years. You need to commit yourself for a year or so, of a couple of hours. So, yeah, no doubt you can find out the information at the local organisations. But go and do that. And, you know, anybody can become an advocate. All you've got to be able to do, all you've got to do is say, keep your mouth shut. Your views are irrelevant. The views of the service user are the most important. If you've got that attitude, you can be a good advocate.
Again, thank you so much, John, for talking to us. I found that really, really informative and just really interesting. And if you were inspired by what John just said, then please do check out the multiple advocacy centres in Leeds, because you never know, you could really, really help someone and be a vital part of someone's recovery, which I think is an amazing thing to do. Next week's topic, sorry, just looking at my notes. Next week's topic will be men and mental health. Well, we'll be talking to the lovely Dom Moffat, our daytime editor, and Aaron Beards, is the son of the guy who we just interviewed, which is quite exciting. And he also does the tech show. So if you want to hear from him before we do the interview, then please check out his show. And just kind of next week's segment is going to be about their experience of being a guy and suffering from mental health, because I think kind of with stigma, you have layers of it. So kind of they've got the stigma of having a mental health condition. And then on top of that, they've got the stigma of being a guy with a mental health problem and kind of talking about their feelings, which isn't really accepted, which is very, very strange. I know. So I will talk to you next Wednesday at 12:30. So please do tune in for that. It's going to be a really, really interesting episode. And I think we're all going to learn a lot. But thank you so much for tuning in today.